Rabbi, we are currently holding today's daf on the 27th day of the Omer, is daf Chavtet. And we were holding in the middle of an explanation of the sugya of the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about ptilat habeget shekipla. Our first attempt, I mean, which it's not even right to say it's our first attempt, it's one approach, which is Rabbi Abba's approach and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Moshe's approach, is that the Mishnah is best explained by seeing it as one issue, and that there's an interrelationship between a ptilat habeget shekipla in terms of the dinim of tuma and in terms of the dinim of hadlak. The only way we could create that relationship was by setting it up with very strict parameters. It had to be talking about precisely a 3x3, I suppose. It had to be talking about a case where it was where Erev Shabbat was on the Yom Tov, and we had to assume that both Shitot and the Mishnah agree that Shivrei Kelim are prohibited for Hadlaka, and furthermore, they had to agree that it's not sufficient to get something that, to begin to burn, but you have to actually burn it after it's already singed around the edges, and Rov HaYotzi, you have to make sure it's lit. And given that that was the case, then the question over here would be the Shaila of Tuma would now define whether it's a Shivrei Kelim, because if you hold that it's in fact a Kli, and you hold that the Kipla doesn't take off the din of the Kli, so then that means it became Shivrei Kelim on Yom Tov. So the very Mandioma who holds that it's Tumea, it's Bekabel Tuma, agrees that you're making it into Shivrei Kelim by the same definition by laying it on Yom Tov. And therefore Rebbe Eliezer holds both Tumeahi, it's a Beged, and therefore in Madlikimba, because by lighting it you'll make it a Shivrei Beged. Rebbe Akiva, on the other hand, holds that since you are already mekapelet on Erev Shabbat, it's tahar. So it means it's not a beged. If it's not a beged already, it can't be a shivrei beged on Yom Tov. It's already basically shivrei kelim, and the two things are interrelated. That was one approach. It's inelegant in terms of its complexity, but elegant in terms of what it does for our Mishnah. Rava takes a simpler explanation, even though it's not elegant at all in the Mishnah, and says that it's actually an unrelated machlokas. It happens to be that the question over here revolves around whether something that's not muvuhav, it's not yet singed, whether you're allowed to light with it on Erev Yom Tov or not, whether we would say that it doesn't burn properly. That's the main problem. It's a ptila shelo huvava, it's a ptila that's not mukurechet, and therefore it isn't going to burn. And there's two separate machlokas in here, which is just another example of the supposed interrelationship between two things, Hadlaka Samer and the Tumah V'Tairah, which has been with us throughout the parashah. Today, because we've brought up the issue of Mesik and Bekelim, so we're going to go into the details, essentially, of the Machlokas Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, about whether you're allowed to use the Shivrei Kelim for Hadlaka, and we'll see that there's various levels of Shivrei Kelim. On Rav Yehuda and Rav, there is this, of course, it's a Tana, Rav Yehuda, who's quoting Rav, who gives us over the nature of the Machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon in this halacha about Shivrei Kelim, which of course is an outgrowth of their overall halacha about Mukta and Nolat. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Mesikin b'Kelim, Vein Mesikin b'Shivrei Kelim, Divrei Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon Matir. The first level of this machlokas is the one that we've already discussed, actual Shivrei Kelim. According to Rav Yehuda, Shivrei Kelim are Mukta, because Rav Yehuda Shita all over is to hold that Nolat, something which wasn't there before, and appears only now, even if it was physically present before, it has a different form and halacha now, is considered to be nolat. And therefore, this case of Shivrei Kelim, before it was usable as X, and now it isn't, is essentially a new item. It's nolat, and therefore, Muksa cannot be used. Rabbi Shimon Matir, again, an outgrowth of the overall machlokes of Rabbi Shimon about whether there exists nolat and Muksa on Shabbos Yom Tov or not. Actually, we'll see, of course, Rabbi Shimon agrees it exists. He just defines it much more strictly. Nesikin b'timarim. Furthermore, you're allowed to use dates for burning, but achlan, once you eat the meat of the date, in mesikin begarinehem, you cannot use the pit of the date, because now that's the equivalent, according to Rabbi Yehuda, of Shivrei Kelim, because the garin was previously part of an edible fruit, and now it becomes firewood, so to speak, and therefore it's nolat, you can't use it. Rabbi Shimon Matir. Seems to be exactly the same thing. The Gemara is going to discuss why it was necessary for Rav to tell us. Actually, we'll see on yet another one, three separate machlokas. Another example of the same issue is Mesikin be'egozim. You're allowed to use nuts in order to burn on Yom Tov, but once you eat the nut, in Mesikin be'klipotehen, you cannot use the shell of the nut to burn, the Rabbi Yehuda, because previously the shell was bottled to the food and is part of a foodstuff, and now it's the equivalent of Shivrei Kelim, it's Nova. Rabbi Shimon Matir. V'tzricha, we need all three of these levels. The Yashminikam Maisa, because if you would have told me only the first one, which talked about actual instruments, Kelim, that were broken, I would have said, well, of course, Vahikom Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum de Mikor, Klivat Shever Kli, Vahavele Nolad, V'yasur. The reason that Rabbi Yehuda perhaps said in that case that you weren't allowed to use it for burning on Shabbat and Yom Tov is because it's a completely new format now. It's Shivrei Kelim, and that's what Nolad is, but Tamarim, nothing changed. The Garin was always in the Tamar. It's just, that's okay. Before I relate it to the Garin as a carrier of the fruit, I haven't changed anything. If I take something and I break it into two, I've changed it. The Garin isn't even touched. So I would have thought that Tamarim were Meikara Garinim Vashta Garinim. There's no difference that can be detected in the Garin per se. So Ema Shapra Dame, I thought perhaps it hadn't been the Rav brought the Machloket here as well. That in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would be Moda, that that's not considered to be a real change, and you would be able to use it for Hadlaka. And then if you told me even that case, Yashminin Garinim, I would have said, okay, you know what? Garinim I understand, because the truth of it is that you don't relate to the Garin at all. You're seeing a Garin. You're holding a whole day. You think of the date as food. Now when you remove the meat after eating, you have something here that you didn't relate to at all. I understand why he would look at that as being nolad or mukta, it was out of my... But a nut, I mean, the shell of the nut was there right in front of my eyes the whole time. Certainly in that case, klipeya gozim, demeikara migala vahashtamik. I mean, there's no real difference in them at all. And then certainly Ema Shapadami Rabbi Yehuda would in that case certainly agree. Therefore comes along Rav to tell me, Tzricha, all of the above cases, Rabbi Yehuda's machmirin, because of the new form that it's taking in your mind. Because in your mind, as in other words, Nola, the idea of Nola, but Rav is expanding on the idea of Nola, is not that it wasn't extant, literally, but rather its form was to you so different that for all intents and purposes, it's something new. Well, that's like mukta. Mukta is something that isn't prepared for use. And I mean, it does say in the Torah, there's something about having things prepared. I mean, it's not literally the thing, but... Exactly, shimush shel apri. Whereas the same as a kli is for the shimush of the kli, and not for hasaka.
What if the hasaka is only in the evidence? You're really just getting rid of it. It's this trash can that you're trying to just burn, get rid of it. Wasn't
perhaps the hazard? Then if you're not being mishamish with it, then enochinami. It's only tashmish of mukta that's prohibited. Not throwing out mukta that's prohibited. But the truth is, it's strange, bichlal, what exactly is our problem over here? It's not that I'm moving it or anything, is it? But what's the tashmish of mukta over here? It's a big machlokas in the Hakon. Some want to conclude from here, including even the Magen Avraham toys with the idea, that the mashmahut is that mukta is aser bahana'ah. But that's, what else am I doing here that's wrong?
You have to move around.
Well, later on in this sugya, we're going to see that there's an issue of moving it. And some say that that's the idea of it, it's always moved. Many learns that it's tashmish of mukta that's prohibited. Doesn't mean that I have to literally move this in the case later on, where it does mean literally you'll have to move it. We'll see why over there it's clearly different. And but the Chazon Ish brings many rayas that there's no iser of hano on mukta. That's a misreading of the sugya over here. But it's the shimush of the thing that seems to be the problem. Chazal iser tashmish of mukta. Why would there be any iser in throwing out or burning mukta? That's not the point. It's not the burning that's the problem. It's Bosh Baruch Hu.
So what was the
use? The fact that I need to use it to whatever for my purposes. That use, the mela brings the tilto. The whole gzeira of mukta, according to Rambam, is essentially a gzeira of tilta, which is a gzeira of hotzah. It's another raya, but that's the only thing on our mind.
Why don't you do the chicken bones?
Chickens.
Chicken bones?
Because those remain the foodstuff. They're still edible.
You
know, they're good for the cat.
Yeah, they don't
burn too well. We'll see later on. The truth is that this case of Garinim, which we're quoting from Rav, wasn't exactly said by him. It's just that it was taken as if he said it because of a particular situation, and whenever the Gemara says there's a lot of Ferushi Gemara, that means that therefore you can't really rely on it. There may be another explanation. A case, actually, where we jumped to the conclusion that Rav would have said the same thing with Garinim came from an event in which Rav was eating tamarim. Mishani kashiata labuchia. He threw the pits of the tamarim into the stovetop. as a fuel. So Reb Chiya said to him, that's an interesting thing you're doing, but, I mean, bar pachti, kinegdo bi yom tov asur. I mean, to do that on yom tov would be asur, because, I mean, you're machmar according to Reb Yehuda.
Meaning no. This wasn't yom tov.
No, this he was doing the chol, but he just made a comment, okay. And Rav accepted the comment, and he didn't argue. And so it appears that we're correct in jumping to a conclusion that that's what he held. I mean, if you ask me in point of fact, keep lamine or low keep lamine, can you prove whether he was makabel that psak from Rabbi Kira or not? Well, there was a case, Tashma dechiyata Rav LeBavel. We know Rav, after moving to Bavel to become Rosh Yeshiva, the Ochol Tamri, v'sharik ha-shayta lechiyuta. What he did over there was he ate the tamarim and he threw the pits into the animal feed. Now, I would assume that the case over there was, my love, this is the only loose piece in this, because I don't have all of the data. There are two different types of tamarim, which we've all met. Some tamarim, high-quality tamarim, which we're calling over here the tamarim parsiata, which are really nice, juicy tamarim. What you do over there is when you take the meat of the tamar off, it strips the garim completely. There's a little membrane that comes off of it, and you're left with a clean, dry garin. The poor quality dates, when you take off the meat, you can still suck on the garin for a long time because it's never really cleaned off. It doesn't peel cleanly. Okay, that's called the armiata. Here we go. These are nice armiata garinims. Not parsaita. I'm not going to get all sticky. You do it. And when you pull off the meat, you're left with a sticky pit that you could still have ochlin on. And therefore, that would still be food. Now, the Shiloh over here is what exactly he did. So, assuming that it was good quality dates, then that means that he held it was okay to use this to be mishamish with mukta, even though it was no longer food. And apparently he was not Mekabel Rebbe Chiya's psak, to which the Gemara says not necessarily. Maybe it was Bar Miata. It was poor quality dates. And the reason that he felt he could still utilize the garinim was because they're still foodstuffs, and therefore they're not mukta. Hoyil v'chazi agav imayu. They're still usable for their mother, so to speak. You still have some of that mother load on them. Omer Rav Shmuel bar Bar Chana l'Rav Yosef, according to Rav Yehuda, who holds mesikim v'kelim ve'im mesikim v'shivrei kelim. I don't understand how that works. Because you had the whole case in the Mishnah where the original explanation that we had is since you have to be madlik berov hayotzei, so you're going to turn it into shivrei kelim. I mean, so by definition, once you've burned a kli, I mean, at one point it becomes shivrei kelim, right? So okay, I understand. I didn't start a fire with shivrei kelim. That itself is not a problem. But once you get a fire going, I mean, don't you? Now, and here's where we introduce the idea of mahapech bisura, not earlier. So, kika mahapech bisura ka mahapech. When you have to stoke the flames, aren't you going to be now moving mukta? Thank you. A new world has come. It's not the air conditioner that proves that it's summer. It's the bottle of water instead of the tea. And we thank you for making the entire springtime full of birds singing and flowers blossoming, everything has changed. So earlier in the Mishnah, we didn't need to deal with the issue. At least this is I believe the correct way to explain it, the way most of the Mepharshim understand it. There was no issue of Mahapet there. It wasn't because we were afraid you're going to have to poke the Ptila or the other cases of the Garim. But here, where you're telling me, well, as long as you start with Kalin, it's okay. I mean, that's all very nice for a start, but the truth is I do have to keep the fire going, and when I keep the fire going, I stoke it. And if I stoke it, then I'm going to be using Shivrei Kelim at that point, so why wouldn't it be us, according to Yehuda anyway? Answers the Gemara, you're actually right, but the only case where Rav Yehuda would say, Mesikim b'kelim, was where there wouldn't be a problem of stoking. And where would that be? The other Kiddur of Matna. You use Rav Matna's approach. Rav Matna says, quoting Rav, that in a case where you have etzim shenashru min adekel etzanur biyom tov, this guy is clearly living the life of Riley. I mean, you know, this is Gan Eden. What do I got to bother putting fuel in my stove? The trees drop their branches into the oven, and all I have to do is, well, hopefully one day just think about it, you know, and it'll light. But when things are bad, you got to actually light them on Yom Tov. So, but here, of course, you've got a problem. According to Rav Yehuda, even Gan Eden is not good enough. Because the Eitzim that fall into the Tanur are now going to be basically Nola. Because before they were growing, they weren't firewood, they were a tree. And now they're firewood. And so, for all that the Malachim got your Tanur ready to burn, you can't use it. So what do?
Well,
of course. Of course. Their tanurim, remember, used to open from the top. The norm would be that you have an open tanur under a tree.
And put a final layer as well, like the wood.
You don't want to make it harder for the malachim.
Okay. This reminds me of that guy in Kenya who just sat down on his table and had his fruits above his head. Just pick and eat.
This is Gan Eden. You just pick and eat. And then you don't clean anything up, you just throw it onto the ground, and out come little scurrying monkeys and beasts. They did eat it. There's nothing left. It's wonderful. So anyway, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what would you do? Says Rav Matzah Marav, the simple Eitzah. If you have rove Eitzim, then basically you're mevatel the Eitzim that are muktzah in the rove Eitzim that are kosher. They were prepared from before, and then you don't have a problem. So the same thing would be true. But you, what happens is you take your kalim. You've got your kalim. You're marba real firewood on the kalim. That way, even when you poke, you go according to the road, and the iser of muktzah becomes batel now in the eitzim that are okay. And so that would have to be the only case, according to Rav Yehuda, that you would be able to do this. Otherwise, you'd be involved in poking muktzah later. I already caught it, so you don't have to be much real. The truth is that that's not so poshut, because in a case, I mean, lemaisa, it's clear from other cases, it's only because the eights were already there, and now you can't move them out, so the only eights you have is to be marba, so we allowed you to be marba. We wouldn't have allowed you to be marba l'chatchila, even though it's not talking about achila over here. The reason that it's okay in cases where you're lighting the kalim is because at the time that you were marba, there was no iser. I'm marba eitzim and a half kalim. I'm allowed to light the kalim. Once I marba those eitzim, even though the kalim later turned into shivrei kalim, after they're burning, at the time that I did the rebuy, I wasn't being mevatel anything on purpose. So if there's a problem of being mevatel here, l'chatchila, it wouldn't apply to this case.
Could it be that after you lit it, you charge it, and take the din of a shivrei kalim? It's always a tree that just happens to be in halakim. It's not really shivrei kalim, it's already on fire.
Yeah, that's what shivrei kalim means. It's no longer, what's here is no longer usable as a cleat. Now, going back to the Mishnah, we have yet another approach. So the two approaches that we had was, does kipul mevatel shem beged, and thereby lead us into the problem of shivrei kalim? That was the first approach. The second approach was two different issues. It's kipul mevatel the din of beged, that part is still the same. The second part was unrelated to that question, and that had to do with the singeing. Do you need to have a singed beged before Shabbos? Lo hi vavan. By the way, it's just as an aside, it's just a interesting, the word hivava has become in modern Hebrew blinking. Right? Lahavhe means turn on your blinkers in your car. The reason that hivhuv is now used for blinkers is because the idea of lo hivava, instead of using a simple word for singeing, which exists, chiruv is singeing. And that's essentially what it's referring to over here, is because particularly, if we want to talk about a case in which I wasn't mamayat the kli, if I don't have to be madlik and rov hayotzen, then the way in which I singe is through touching lightly. As you know, you bring the fire close to it, take it away, fire close, take it away. You don't want it to actually burn. So every heave hoof is essentially blinking. Attack in, out, in, out, in, out. So we used, in conjunction with a light, which is the fire here, heave hoof, to have a blinking light. It's a very cute Ben Yehuda extension of the idea in the Mishnah. That makes a great deal of sense. Anyway, that's just a Lashon aside. Rega Shalivri. We have now a third possibility. And the third possibility is that indeed the approach of Rava about the question of Hadlaka is correct. We're only talking about the singeing and whether that's important. The first assumption that we made, according to Rav Nuna, was incorrect. The machlokas is not whether kipul is mevatel the shame of beged. The machlokas is whether a ptilat ha-beged is a beged. And what is a ptilat ha-beged? Ah, says Rav Nuna. We are not talking about exactly shalosh al shalosh, nor are we talking about slightly larger than shalosh. We're actually talking about less over here than the shear of Shalosha. Once it would be Shalosha, Tvachim. Then, of course, it would be Hashuv, we said, for Aniyim and for Ashirim, and there'd be no problem. Here we're talking about, it's less than Shalosha of Shalosha, and we're dealing with Kulei Matlaniot. Kulei Matlaniot, not to be confused with the idea of Kulei in terms of Halakha, less stringent, lenient. Kulei, we mean when something is Kal Be'enecha, it's unimportant to you. We have over here, basically, pieces of cloth which you have already determined to use in particular ways. So you've set aside a piece of cloth, let's say, as a drain stopper. Now, as a drain stopper, it's not really a valuable baguette the way a normal thing would be, even if you're an onishalach, or more than shalosh. Or you set it aside next to the oven to use when you need to grab a pot. I mean, it's obviously a temporary kind of thing. It isn't sewn or anything. It's a piece of cloth that you use to grab a hot pot with or something, or a hot spoon with. Small. Use it for a hot spoon.
Shmatas,
exactly. But shmatas that have a particular low-level use that I'm not, you know, I don't intend necessarily to keep them around. And the machlokas over here of whether the makabel tuma is completely unassociated with the questions of kippul or of hivuv or any other machlokas about shivrei kelim. This happens to be a well-known machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, and that's why Rabbi Nuna says it makes a great deal of sense to use my approach. We know that this machlokas exists. What is the status of matlaniyot, which have been set aside for a less than normative use of a beggar? And that's the Mishnah as follows. And that's probably the same issue that is going on over here, says Rabbi Nuna, is the issue that was going on in the Mishnah in Kaylee. It's not. Pachot mishlosha or shlosha. If you have a piece of beged that is less than 3x3 tvachim, and therefore doesn't have the full chumrah, bein lani and bein lashirim abugani, shikino lepakei ketan merchav. So you decided you're going to use this to stuff the drain in your bathtub. Well, in the erbo atakadera, you're going to use it to grab a hot pot. Or lekaneh bo atarechayim, you need to have a rag that's available after grinding to be able to get out the grain residue, because otherwise your grinder goes smooth. So, bein min ha-mukhan, bein sheinu min ha-mukhan. Whether this is now mukhan or not, which doesn't make any sense. What do you mean? You just said you're determined to use it for that. And the Gemara will talk about what we mean by that wording. Bein min ha-mukhan, bein sheinu mukhan. Says Rebbe Eliezer, it's tamei. Now, doesn't that sound suspiciously like our Mishnah Pilat HaBeged, Rebbe Eliezer Omer, tamei? Yeah, there you go. It's probably the same idea. Rebbe Yoshua, who doesn't appear in our Mishnah, but Rabbi Akiva does, and we'll see Rabbi Akiva actually appears in a minute. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Bein Min HaMukhan or Bein Shalom Min HaMukhan, Tahor. It doesn't matter whether it was Mukhan or not. Again, we don't know what those words mean. But he seems to be saying the complete opposite of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says no matter what the circumstances, it's always Tameh. Rabbi Yeshua says no matter what the circumstances, it's always Tahor. And Rabbi Akiva comes across as being in the middle. He says, well, it depends. Min HaMukhan Tameh. Mishalom min ha-mukhan tahor, and clearly the Machlokes in our Mishnah would then be Rabbi Eliezer saying it's tamei under all circumstances, and Rabbi Akiva, assuming that we're talking about the case where it was Mishalom min ha-mukhan, he would be saying that, Tilat ha-beged, that you're saying is tamei. I say, as I did in Kalin, that it's tahor. And there you go. Simple explanation. Why does it say Shekipla? Because we were about to talk about Yibaba. So I mean, we have to say, you only twisted it to make a Tila, but you didn't, lo Yibaba, you didn't singe it. But the part about kippla had nothing to do with the tomb entirely. And we had jumped to the conclusion that the question was whether the kippul, I mean, why else did I mention kippul? Must be because the kippul is the issue. No, says Rebbe, the kippul is not the issue. The kippul was only said to introduce the question of whether it was singed or not. The issue was mukhan or eno mukhan by kulei matlanios. So now we have to understand what indeed is mukhan or eno mukhan. Says now Ulam, or something was Rabba Bar Bachanam Rabbi Yochanan, let me explain to you the use of the wording of your mukhan reina mukhan. Besides the question of your determination of how to use this thing, you took a rag and you stuffed it into your bath. Okay, all very nice. What did you do when you let the water out of your bath? Because very often these things are one-time use things. Shmatas are shmatas that are one-time shmatas. If you don't intend now to view this as a bag that is permanently in place, I mean, so then basically you're now being mevatelit. For all intents and purposes, it's thrown out. It's not being used as a pakat. Now, the truth is that there may be a number of different things. We can really think of four different levels of how to look at this. You could throw it into the garbage on one extreme, which means that you're mevatel, you're mashallah on it. You could put it into your box of saved shvatas, which is the other extreme, which means you intend to keep it and reuse it. But, I mean, there's also different things you could do. In order not to make that decision, there's always a simple solution. You open up your kitchen cabinet and you stuff in the little thing behind the door, right? That's what you do with everything that you haven't yet quite made up your mind what you're going to do with. So that's called achorei hadel.
Okay. I have a room like that.
A house like that. Okay, now that's close. That's close to putting it in the garbage. That's one step away. Then you've got something that's closer to the kupsa, which is you put it on a hook. And now it's nearby, you might actually reuse it. You haven't started the process of making the determination that you're going to be misgabbered and throw it out when your wife finally gets on your case. Okay, so we basically have three dargas over here. Four dargas over here. So therefore, says Rabbi Yochanan, as quoted here, that hakol modim, everybody agrees you get threw it into the garbage. I mean, then nobody would have held that it's tamei. Then divrei hakol tahor. Everybody, even Rabbi Eliezer would hold it's tahor. On the other hand, if you went to the other extreme, you put it into your box of favorite shmatas, then everybody is moded it's tamei. Even Rabbi Yeshua is moded it's tamei. Lo neflaku el shetala obim agod, o sheinicho liachorei hadela. The only question is that middle state where you put it on the hook or you put it behind the door. There, Rabbi Eliezer holds, well, you couldn't get yourself to throw it away, could you? So, midalozar ko ba'ashva, clearly it's still daita iluye. You haven't been able to let go. And therefore, it's called, it's still a beggar. So, why then, ba'amai korele shalom minu mukhan? I mean, isn't the whole point that therefore it is mina mukhan? No, he's saying, even though it's shalom minu mukhan, in terms of the case that I would have clearly accepted, that everybody would have agreed to the kupsa. In other words, shalom minu mukhan relative to a kupsa, shalom minu mukhan, okay? You, Rabbi Yoshua, you all, the only case of mukhan is the kupsa. I'm telling you, I disagree with you. And even in your shalom minu mukhan, I call it mukhan. Therefore, I say to you, Rabbi Yoshua, even though it's shalom minu mukhan, in your opinion, it's still tameh, because I really do hold it's minu mukhan. Rabbi Yoshua, on the other hand, says, well, look, I mean, you took the first step towards throwing it out, didn't you? I mean, you just couldn't get yourself to go all the way yet. But if you really intended to keep it, you would have put it in your shmata bag. So, therefore, I see that basically, he's more pessimistic, but basically, you've really been mevatlet. But, betule batlet. Now, why do I call that muhan? Because I'm talking to you. In terms of ashpa, this is muhan, right? So I'm saying, even though it hasn't gone all the way and not thrown into the ashpa, I want you to know that I say even a level of achana like that is basically potom mevuto is das and it's shalom and muhan. Rabbi Akiva says, well, you know, if you put it on the hook and you didn't even put it behind the cabinet door, that's more likely it's like Rabbi Eliezer and your das is still on it. If you already took that fatal step of putting it in the place behind your cabinet, and then if it's v'nichra chorei adelet, there I agree with Rabbi Yoshua, and it's tall.
It's like sweeping it under the rug, so to speak.
What's that?
It's more like sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah. And in the end, by the way, Rabbi Akiva agreed with Rabbi Yoshua entirely, by the way. I mean, because why do I say that? I'm a rabbi, I'll tell you why he said it. Take a look at the Lashon in the Mishnah. P'tilat ha-beged. I mean, what is p'tilat ha-beged? Why don't you say, my Ari d'tani p'tilat ha-beged? You should have said, p'tilat shel beged. You tell me p'tilat ha-beged, you're saying, even though a dying beged who, so it's still a beged, I'm still looking at it of as if it's mukhan, so to speak, in the level of Rabbi Yeshua. Nonetheless, I agree, Rabbi Akiva, that it's tahor. And that explains the Mishnah very simply. We're not talking about the kippul is not the issue. That's only the issue in terms of Shabbos. In terms of Tyre, we're talking about that middle stage between shalosh al-shalosh al-shalosh al-shalosh, where you set it aside for kulei, meaning for cheap kind of usages in your eyes, and therefore the Shabbos at this point, whether you were mevatel it or not.
Why isn't the
a beged is a kli? Kalim that are made out of material are called begodim. A beged essentially is just the format of a kli. We'll call every beged a kli. It's a kli for wearing. In other words, you would never use one of those black hats. You wouldn't call it a beged. It's basically a kli that you put on your head. But by extension, we call it a beged.
Well, A laundry bag in the airport?
What?
A laundry bag?
It's a bag.
It's a bag.
Sure.
So how do we harvest those food initially? Different options here, or are we go back to last?
Different options. Sorry.
Just a highly commissioner.
Lo yikov adam shefoferet shel beitza. Now that we finally got our lamp going, and we've got it filled with fuel, we've got a problem. And our problem is extra fuel tanks. What do you do if you want your lamp to burn a long time and it simply doesn't contain enough fuel? There's a very simple solution. All you got to do is you take an eggshell that you've hollowed out and you put it on top, right on top of the lamp, with a little hole in it so that it drips into the lamp itself. But now you've got a spare fuel tank.
So they got the idea for space shuttle, I guess. Right?
They actually have an eggshell construction to save weight. But by the way, the Eliyahu Rabba says the correct way to read this, believe it or not, is not beitza, but bitza. And shvoferet shel bitza means a konet. Shvoferet meaning a hollow piece of wood that grows in the swamp wood, which you can use then. Yeah, like a reed, exactly. So it's a tube that you take from a bitza. I mean, why would people hollow out an egg? But, you know, of course, people do this. It's actually fun. No, that's why. It's for Easter, is actually the reason. But the leftovers, what did you know it? The Jews would take all of those carefully hollowed out Easter eggs. It's another thing, the rotten Jews. And use it for the Shabbos candles. Of the bitza or the beitza?
The nervous there. With what, egg or a reed?
But how?
It doesn't look like an egg to me.
And the reason would be, you want it to drip. And the truth is, even if you wasn't really an egg, but it was made out of keres, a filish of keres, it's the same idea. But what's the idea? The idea is that an extra fuel tank might be attractive in terms of food.
Food.
Yeah, I mean you ran out of your olive oil on the table, and there is a nice attractive eggshell filled with olive oil.
Never miss a drop.
Well, why not? Yeah, they'll never miss it. Exactly. Yeah, why not pour a little bit on your salad and then put it back? It's dripping anyway, right? And of course, if you would do that, you get to the problem of mechabeh, because it doesn't matter whether you're mechabeh by removing oxygen from the lamp or mechabeh by removing the fuel from the lamp. It's still mechabeh, and therefore we are. But Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yehuda says, it's okay. Aval in chibra yotzer mitchila mutar. It doesn't mean it's usher to have a spare fuel tank made originally on your Shabbos candle. Then it's part of the lamp, and you're sort of, you know, out of sight, out of mind. But that's my lamp. Now, there's also another trick that you can do to have a spare fuel tank, and that is you can simply use a cup, fill it with oil, and attach a wick from the cup to your lamp, and that way the lamp ultimately draws from the cup from capillary action. You'll end up using that oil as well. Over there, you got the same problem. It's in a separate cup, so you'll pour some of it out. So lo yimalei adam ki'ara shel shemen. Don't take a bowl of oil. It's nene betzada ner. Place it next to the ner. V'yiten rosh ha'ptila betocham. Put the other end of the wick in it to draw. B'shvil shtei shoavet to draw out of it. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. And Rabbi Yehuda here too says it's mutar, which means that basically we have three cases in the Mishnah. We have the two primary cases of extra fuel tanks through dripping and extra fuel tanks through drawing with the ptila. And we also have a subcategory, which is the difference between an eggshell and cheres. Now cheres is disgusting if it's been used once. And that introduces a new idea. So let's take a look why we need all these three cases. The Ashwinish Shofer Shel Beitza. I would have said, okay, the Rabbanim say it's an eggshell, nice, clean, pretty eggshell with a little coating of plastic inside. Those things are designed for perfect use of keeping your extra oil clean enough to put into your shemen, into your salad. So over there, the Rabbanim answered it, given to Loma Isa. There's nothing disgusting about that. Asir is tapukimina. You may well use it. But cheres, once you burn a ner shel cheres, it's all sooty and disgusting. And you wouldn't want to take oil out of a lamp, really, to use in your salad. So over there, it's ma'isa. Maybe they would be moda to Rabbi Yehuda. There's no reason to make a gzeira. On the other hand, iyash minat shel cheres, if you would have told me the case of cheres, perhaps that's the only reason that Rabbi Yehuda was not here. So the hakam Rabbi Yehuda that it's mutar. Mishum, I mean, you have the case here of the charis, but here, if it was a nice clean eggshell, even with Yehuda, perhaps would be moda that you'd have to worry. Maybe you take some for your salad, so maybe be moda to the rabbonim. Now, let's say I knew both of these cases, the eggshell case and the charis case. I would have said, okay, Rabbi Yehuda is ready to say in that case that you look at it and you say to yourself, oh, I can't touch that. I can't use that on Shabbos. It's all part of the lamp. Because, I mean, it's right there on top of the lamp, the eggshell. It's not sitting at the side. But a ka'ara. I mean, you take a look at the ka'ara. The ka'ara's got a little seal in it. I mean, big deal. It's basically a nice separate cup of oil. Why can't I use that? No, but it's mifsika. It's not attached to the lamp. Not on the lamp. So, ema moda lo rabbanan. Maybe he would, in that case, would be moda to the rabbanan that there's a serious chashash of taking that oil and being mechabeh. Therefore, comes along the Mishnah to tell me that no, even over there, Rabbi Yehuda argues. There, ema moda lo Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, if we would have had only this case, of course I would have said, well, actually the Rabbanan in this case argued. But in the other two cases where it's attached to the Ner, meaning not attached, but it's on the Ner itself, therefore we need the cases both for Rabbi Yehuda and for the Rabbanan.
This is the question on that. This reminds me of Moshe's Zatzal's Kiddush that turning off the gas and yom tov might not be, it's unpublished Kiddush that turning off the gas and yom tov is not necessarily a kibbutz. Who knows if it's my Shabbos here, kind of.
Yes, it's interesting that there are some.
Kiddush Gadol, he doesn't say what it is, and by kibbutz.
Yeah, there are some who hold this, the same thing by the balloons of gas that were in common use here. Things have gotten a little bit more modern, but still many places they use balloons, where when you turn off the balloon, the gas still continues to flow a little bit. Otherwise you have a long pipe going to your balloon, it won't turn off instantly. So in such a case where it's not being shoev, remember, the problem here is that it says over here, the only time that we ask for this is if you have an egg that was set as an extra fuel tank, right? How about if your house is on fire and you want to take out some things from the house that shouldn't burn? Is that mechabeh? Because you're removing the fuel from the flames. It certainly is not mechabeh. We'll see later on that you're allowed to do that. We'll talk about precisely in terms of the chashash and the character for surrounding. We have different questions about how much you can take out and so on. There's certainly no problem with mechabeh. Why is this considered to be mechabeh? Only because it's bishvil shetei. When it says bishvil shetei minat tefes, it's not giving me the explanation of why you did it. It's telling me that it was done for that purpose. So the setting it aside for that purpose makes it into the lamp. It's a very surprising thing. In other words, not only is your machshava the definer of the melacha, but it's your machshava that defines the nature of this flame. That's a pretty amazing thing. In other words, what is considered to be the lamp? Whatever I decided would be considered to be the lamp. The fact is, it's going to burn. Whether you put it there, maybe you just put it there because it's really for your salad. And it has a leak in it. You figure, the heck, I don't want it leaking all over the table. Let me put it on the lamp. So you leave it on the lamp so that it shouldn't leak on your table. In that case, it would not be usher to take from it on Shabbos. That's exactly the same case. It's interesting, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman points this out in the Kovach Yur. That your machshava is lapela. Your machshava creates the circumstances of how we view the reality of the burning flame, right?
You know, not
what's the lamp?
Not
a no. It says it has to be b'shvil shteimen atef. If it's not b'shvil shteimen atef, but it's not considered to be kibbutz. Over here too, you're saying, but this fire would ultimately consume these clothes. How can you take them outdoors? It wasn't set up for that. So that's not called mechabeh. So therefore, there's a question that some raise about balloons. If the normal intent is that this was the way it was done once upon a time, you know, the little dude that's next to the oven, those actually used to be used. Now they're only as a safety device. If you can't get to the oven, you close them. But they actually used to be used. Nobody would leave their gas on. So the norm was to close the gas. My God, if you left the house and left the gas on, the old lady would kill you in Meir Shearim. Das vermagdem Gord. So therefore, it's not standard to let that all of the gas in the balloon is meant to be burnt in the fire. But Mr. Michigan, I mean, we can afford a fire like that. Besides, maybe some of the gas will leak out and it could cost us another five grush. And those were the days when five grush meant something. So, Mamela, it's not the lamp. That's the question in the Akron. No one has the guts to actually be matzah turning off the gas under these circumstances on Shabbos, although although there are people who talk about it under the table. On Shabbos, it would be the same thing, Lechora. Some would talk about it on Shabbos. Reb Zalman is Reb Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, as well as Chuvani. Okay, but certainly on Yontif, you can easily see the, you know, of course, that's the basis of this whole new, you know, the little Mechon Tzomet. They have this little, we're there, it's indeed set up, L'chadchila, to turn off.
Why would it be on
a little spring?
Shabbos would be like the same way you're moving the clothes away from a fire.
Yeah.
You didn't want that to be...
It was never meant to burn. That wasn't part of my lamp. I want to take away now the gas. I want to remove the gas balloon, let's say, for some other purpose. To strangle my neighbor. So I want to plug it into his house instead of having it plugged into my stove. So why should I not be allowed to strangle my neighbor with the gas?
Well, strangling,
you
don't know
his
gas. It's not a fixed...
Okay, it's fine. Aaron raised the issue, so I'm just talking it out. So not from ISIS, since no one will do it. So. Okay.
I was told that you probably would. Yeah, was, okay, that's enough.
Okay.
But I think more than this thing I heard it said about Lego gas stove.
You heard what?
Moshe has a word. He said that. Yes, the Kiddush Gadol.
Yes. Well, what's the second word you said? I heard it said.
Moshe says he has a Kiddush Gadol, which he doesn't want to say for favors.
Yeah.
Those are the words he has in the Shulchan. Someone told me that he's referring to a regular gas stove, not from the old fashioned.
Yeah, but it would be the same idea. It would be the same idea if it would be the derech to close an oven. It doesn't have to necessarily be in a balloon. It could be in a central storage place. V'im chibra yotzer mitzila mutar. Tana. The Brisa says, im chibra besidu b'chasit mutar. As long as you glued it yourself. You glued it onto the nair. It's also good. What? But the Mishnah says the yotzer. I mean, doesn't that mean, doesn't that be manufactured that way? That just glued on an extra fuel tank? No, that just means ke'en yotzer. In other words, if you make it a good chibur, seed and so on, doesn't have to manufacture that, but you manufacture it for that purpose, it's perfectly okay. Probably the correct gears here is Shavatnu. Pamachat Shavatnu Baliyat Beit Nitzah Balud. We once spent Shabbos in Beit Nitzah's famous Aliyah in Lud. And you know what they did? I can tell you, my friends, personally, I actually did this. I took an eggshell and I made a hole in it. And I put it on the fire myself. Okay, Rabbi Tarfon was there. The Zakanim were there. You think they wouldn't have said something if I did something wrong? Nobody said a word. So obviously, is that a problem? Lo amru lo davar. I'm telling you, this was acceptable across the board. Amru lo misham raya. We even bring it to raya from there. Shinei beit nitzad zerizine. I mean, that's dead. Nobody would have said a word to you over there because there was no chashash over there. But the question is whether, under normal circumstances, this indeed would be a chashash. Now, this opens up a little bit of the Pandora's box of Gezerot Rabbanan. I mean, was there such a Gezerah? Was there not such a Gezerah? If there's such a Gezerah, we're not going to say that Kol HaBeitzim Asurim, the Beitzim Shel Beit Nitzah Mutarim. That's ridiculous. That's the famous famous Gemara Pesachim about whether a bakery that has a stamper to make nice little cakes would be mutter to do it because it's not going to take more time to bake their matzah in a nice shape. So that's very kol tzarika nasurim and dafka tzarika to this guy are mutter. So it doesn't make sense to say this reason. If on the other hand no such gezeira exists, so do we expect there to be an assumption of a gezeira? Well, gee, something bad might come of this, and therefore it's a given that it's usur. Now the truth is that we do have certain types of activities which lend themselves so much to leading to Isser that without a particular gezeira across the board of assering this, we answer it under the general rubric of don't do something that leads to Isser. But in those circumstances, it really depends on the situation. If you are in a situation in which this thing in fact doesn't lead to Isser, and we will see, we're coming to a very famous occurrence of exactly this rule, which is not well defined on this study. And that is, are you allowed, let's say, to sweep the floor on Shabbos? What's the problem? The problem is that where you've got floors that are mostly dirt floors, sweeping the floor would be a serious problem. Now, how about if you are a rich man in town and you have a tiled floor? So, can you do your floor, but nobody else in town can do their floor? So there we come, in fact, into a general idea in which if the norm is to have a covered floor in this area, then you can do it. If the norm is not, you can sit there too. What do you mean norm? They go there according to the norm. So there are certain types of gzeirot in which we understand that the circumstances are definitive. Therefore, they're telling to Rebuta, don't bring us a riot that it was allowed in Beit Nitzah. Even if this is Asr, it wasn't Nimnu the Gomru to Asr. It's Asr because it leads to Isr, and therefore was accepted as being Asr. But why would anybody have opened up their mouths there in Aliyat Beit Nitzah, which is a place in which everybody was careful? Now, there was a case of Ovin, there's a similar case, in which Ovin Sipura'a, Gorar Safsala B'ilita Deshisha, Le'elam in Rebuta Ben Elazar. Rebuta Ben Elazar was sitting there. And this gentleman Ovin from Tzipori, which is a place of Barnea's neighborhood, he dragged a safsal across the floor in a beautifully shyish floored aliyah, a second story that had a floor of marble, which was obviously no problem of dragging and making any kind of furrow on the floor. And Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar stopped him because he says, you know what? If I shut up the way Rabbi Tarfon was quiet over there, which led Rabbi Yehuda to the assumption of, well, I suppose it's complete hetter, nobody would ever worry about such a thing. If I do the same thing here, saying to myself, well, I mean, after all, it's a marble floor, what possible harm could come of it? I'll tell you the possible harm that'll come of it, because nobody else in town has a marble floor. So they will figure, oh, well, look at this thing. If Eilim were there and they allowed you to drag it across the floor, he himself holds like Rav Yehuda, apparently, that it's usher to drag across the floor. So if I'm going to be quiet here, next thing you know, everybody in town is going to be over on dragging things across a dirt floor, creating furrows and being Makala Shabbat. Therefore, I tell you to stop. Zera Elita, the Shisha, the Elita, the Alma. You can't do this because in a normal floor, you don't have a tile in your head. Now, this here, as Tosfos brings, ultimately, we're going to see that Amemar was matir doing this in the town of Mechuza. But that's because the town of Mechuza was basically L.A. And over there, there's no chashash of Ashmiya Gumas, because everybody has marble floors. If you don't have marble floors, you have to leave the neighborhood. So in the neighborhood, there would be no chashash. That's just one of those things. Reish Kanishta, the Batsra, the Reish Kanishta, Rashi says, his job is to get people into davening on time, you know? Basically. So he puts everybody in their seats and gets everybody in, and he gives out the seats to the kids, and so he's the Reish Kanishta. Anyway, he dragged a sapsal in the Beit HaKnesset, because that's part of his job. Le'elam Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba said to him, hey, buddy, come on, according to whom are you dragging that? You're going according to Rabbi Shimon? I mean, Rabbi Shimon didn't say, just as a matter of course, don't even worry about it. Rabbi Shimon said, look, if you've got something heavy to drag, then it's inconvenient to lift it up. Okay, you can drag it if it's not going to be a psikresha to make a furrow on the ground. So that was something that's gadol or galo epsha. But the safsal, why don't you pick it up like a mensch and move it to the other side of the shul? Why do you got to drag it across the floor to be sumach on Rabbi Shimon where it's not necessary to do so? Miktanim mi omar? Did he ever say you could just drag whatever you want? And actually, he did. And pligeri ula, the omar ula, Machloket biktanim, avo bigdolim de reakomut. Actually, Ula says, even Rabbi Yehuda was matter if it's something big. Rabbi Yehuda didn't expect you not to move things on Shabbos. He agrees that ultimately you don't have to worry about it, but we don't pass him like that either. Basid Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gorer Adam Mite, Mitak Yisei Besapsal. Now, come on. I mean, you really got to keep beating on a dead horse. Mita Yisei Besapsal. Be'aron Sfarim, Be'shulchan Machshev. I mean, why don't you just give me the list? What is this, the movers? Give me an example. Clearly you're giving me a range of small things and big things. Now, why do you have to do that? To tell me that on either end, and don't say the big thing Rabbi Yehuda is going to be made, I'm not made that. And don't say the little things Rabbi Shimon would say, well, you got to drag it, carry it. What's the difference? So isn't that the whole point? I mean, it says, Gorer Adam Mitak Yisei Besapsal, B'Rvad Shalei Kavim Lasot Charitz. Okay. So Katani Gedolim, Katani Ketanim, to make it very clear that both of you are wrong, Kashila Tarvayu, both of you are wrong. Obviously Rabbi Yehuda does not agree if it's big. Obviously Rabbi Shimon does not say avoid it if it's small. It says both ends to address both shitas, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Well, Ula will have to explain this, Lashitato. Of course, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba, who says Rabbi Shimon disagrees if it's small, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba would be Matarzatai. Ula Matarzatai, he would say, well, when it says Mita, it's a Kisei like Mita. I mean, otherwise, it's together with Kisei. You know, one of the small Mitas. Yeah. And Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba Matarzatai, well, no, I mean, when it says a chair, it doesn't mean a small chair. I mean, a chair like a bed. I mean, I mean, a reverse a chair. So that's a Kisei Dumya Lamita. Masiv Rabba. Rabba says, look, you have an equivalent case basically on people who are going around selling clothing. Now, there's different ways you can sell clothing. You can sell clothing by conveniently putting on all the clothes.
Hats for sale.
Exactly. And you're carrying 15 hats on your head, you know. And you've got a client, you take the hats off, and you show them the various hats. You could also have 15 suits on your back. You know, you start with the 38 and get up to the 54th. And it's really nice. And the guy wants to try on a suit, you peel off the jacket, and you get four layers down, and you give him his size. Now we don't have to schlep anything around. It can get a little hot on hot days.
Much less overhead.
There's a lot of overhead.
Yeah, that's on the hats part, yeah. So it says over there, how about if the suits are shotness? I said, now here you are wearing 15 shotness suits above your regular suit, which is not shotness. You would find you wouldn't wear shotness. So it says over there that Mokrik suit, Mokrin Kedarkan, there's no problem in wearing the shotness suits, obviously, for the goyim you're selling to. As long as you don't have kavana in wearing those big Panama hats to shade yourself from the sun. And the geshamim, because of the cold. The geshamim, hatsnuim, people who are very makbid and don't want to even have anybody thinking maybe that they're not shielding bimakel achorei. They carry around the shatner's suits on a stick behind their back. Now, v'hakad efshel amevet kitsnuim, okay? I mean, if you want to, you could always carry these suits on a stick. So, I mean, according to you, you claim that Rabbi Shimon is motive, you've got an option. Don't drag, obviously this is going to Rabbi Shimon, because otherwise, what does your kavanah have to do with it? I mean, Rabbi Shimon is saying, since I wasn't mechaven to wear this kilayim, and to be nene from this kilayim, whether derech levish or derech ha'alah, there's no problem in it. All I'm doing is trying on a suit while I'm wearing a red. Tosis points out, obviously, I mean, if it's a psikresha, if you're not wearing another suit, in fact, if this is going to warm you, and it's comfortable, so then it's a psikresha, it's a mechaven. I mean, there's no way to do it. But you're basically boiling anyway. It's a hot day. You're trying on a suit for the winter. You're wearing your regular clothing, and you want to get it off you as quickly as possible. So then you can try on a shotness suit too, because you're wearing your regular clothing. Now, certainly, I mean, there's a way in which you could carry the suit on a hanger. A suit isn't so heavy, is it? So this is like Tanim. The chilon is coming. Sure, Rabbi Shimon lechatzchila. Now here, Rabbi Shimon says, look, if it's more convenient. It's equivalent to more convenient to dragging the chair. Drag the chair. Don't want to have to lift the chair. It's the same thing. More convenient to wear the suit than to carry the suit on a hanger. So then wear the suit. So you see that Rabbi Shimon is matir, the enum is coming even lechatzila, which is to yufta of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabba made such a fuss about, well, he tells him, you had no right to drag the safsal, you should have lifted the safsal. That's wrong. Rabbi Shimon holds you could actually drag it, even lechatzila. And indeed, to yufta, we don't go along with his psak of needing to try to avoid dragging, according to Rabbi Shimon.
We should be here soon. Rabbi Shimon is coming by, not just by Shabbat, by Kotor Kulah.
Well,
by Tanis.
Well, let's not jump to the Kotor Kulah conclusion.
Oh, yeah, but Tanis.
Yeah, because, I mean, over there, Rabbi Shimon is defined by intent.